right, happy Thursday to you. Welcome to episode 150 of the Brian's World Live Podcast. I'm Brian James, author and radio host on the East Coast. Looking forward to having a great conversation with you today. I got a guest who is, well, blood couldn't make us any closer. He's like a big brother to me. He's been on a show before. His name is Jay Julian, and I'm really excited about something that he and one of his partners, Miguel, a project that they worked on and put together called My Brother's Keeper, a men's group that they put together to try to, get men to have conversations that, we don't have with each other that we really should be having. You know, we hold a lot of things in as men, and even, I would argue that women may have even a foggy understanding of manhood as well. You know what I mean? So, and the infusion of emotion and passion and a bit of tenderness, infusing that with manhood is something that is new. And it's so new to our society that, even saying that probably sounds foreign to a lot of people. But when we stop and really look at some of these, some of the people that I revere, some of the, your Barack Obamas, I think it's some of my favorite athletes like LeBron, Kobe, rest in peace. These are men who, based on the standards that, the superficial standards that represented men for the past couple of centuries, these are men, these are man's men's, or these, I said that completely wrong. These are men's men, or the manly man, if you will. But if you really stop and look at them under the hood, you start to see that, underneath the tough exterior of winning all those championships and having to go toe-to-toe with some of the best in the game and some of the best in politics and having to actually fight for different things on the front line and kind of have that vibrato, that zeal, that strength, that stoicism that has been tied to manhood for so long. Like, they have all of that. But beyond that exterior on the inside, they're warm family guys. They are guys who we have seen get emotional. They're guys who we have seen tap into the actual emotions of whatever we're facing at the time, whether it's, a tragedy. I never forget watching Barack Obama cry after one of the school shootings. I can't remember exactly what shooting it was, but I remember him crying at the podium. And, it was a moment for me that I was just like, wow, okay. Barack Obama, the leader of the free world, quote unquote, on TV right now, crying, feeling the emotion. Something that has been turned away or something that has been prohibited from being tied to manhood for so long. Or to watch LeBron. Or to listen to LeBron get emotional about the social injustices that we're facing right now, that the African American culture is facing right now, or really that the world is facing. It's not just black culture. The African American race is the victim of that, but it's a conversation that's wider than just the African American community. And at the center of that, LeBron James has been very vocal. Very vocal. You know what I mean? Like, I can't recall a specific image of him necessarily crying about things, but he certainly has delivered emotional rhetoric along with that conversation, So I'm excited about Jay. I'm excited about hearing about My Brother's Keeper, and I'm excited about exploring and talking more about male-to-male intimacy, platonic, and we're excited to talk to Jay and get his ideas and ideals of how men can tap into the warmer, more tender side of themselves that it's painful to try to hide it sometimes, to be honest with you, and sometimes it's a pain that I don't think a lot of guys really pay attention to, but I'm just interested in having this conversation to figure out what we need to do to expand the definition of manhood, to make room and allow for men to actually feel. But before we get into that, let's get into some Brian's World News, baby.
It's about to be a hell of a night.
Hey, yo, it's Tayo.
I'm Melissa Carr.
This is Ray Shrimmer.
It's Brian's World Live.
Live. You know what it is.
Y'all turn up.
All right, first up, a little update about myself and my work and the things that I'm doing. I know that the podcast episodes have not been as frequent as you may have been used to. This is episode 150, so we've been, you've been around the block for a minute, but the last month or so, I may have released two episodes, you know. And then before that, it was a long time before we had put an episode out. Now, you know, just I'm just in a zone right now, and I have been in a zone right now working on this book, and I'm really excited. Like I'm hitting a point where like I'm getting ready. Like I'm just now comfortable mentioning it for real, you know, to you. You know what I mean? Or on the podcast, I should say. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I could be a little bit superstitious sometimes. So, you know, when I'm working on something, you know, I lock the doors, I paint the windows, and I lock myself in there, and I just sit there until it's done. And it's kind of what I've been doing the last couple of months. But I am at the point right now with this particular book that I can confidently, you know, speak about it. And, you know, just kind of let you know that's just what I have been doing, you know. So if I had to give a percentage on it, you know, in terms of actually writing the book, I would say I'm literally just now hitting about 70%. And I'm you know, continue to put out episodes even throughout, you know, while I'm writing. But, you know, it's going to be, you know, down to once a week, you know. And I'm enjoying this process. I wish I could share the title, you know, but the title still is a little foggy, but I wish I could at least give you some details about it, you know what I mean? But, you know, right now, I'll just say that, you know, writing this book has been literally the saving grace of my days, you know, for the last couple of months, man. It's just creative minds and those within the creative industries can attest to how hard it is to contain an idea, you know, or how hard it is to like have a story that's on your heart. Whether I don't know, well, you know, whether you write as well or whether you you know, find creative ways to infuse art into your 9-to-5 or however you pass your time creatively, you know how it is when you got a project, yo. It's just something that's just sitting on your soul, and it's just all you could think about. And that's just kind of where I've been. And you know, it's something that is waking me up every morning, and it's kept me up at night, you know. And it's just been a blessing, and I can't wait to share it with you. So, but that's kind of where I've been. But you know, the prayers, the thoughts, and the well wishes, and all of that, man, I am receiving all of that. If you got them, send them my way, please. Like, you know, just I've had some conversations over the last couple of months, you know, from random readers, you know, and some of them aren't random readers. Some of them are familiar faces, but randomly share with me that they've read, or randomly have shared with me how they have, you know, digested the story or whatever, digested the series. And, you know, they've sent well wishes and sent love, and I've digested all of that. So if you, and all that good energy and everything, the doors, my door's open, my DM's open, my phone is open, my inbox is open, send me an email, whatever. I appreciate all the love. And as you know, you know, with everything I do, with everything I touch, with everything that you hear me on, I seek to reciprocate that same energy for, you know, your life, your family, your projects, your artwork, even your food. Your food, especially if they're tacos. I have tacos on my mind right now, so God bless the tacos. But thank you so much for all the support thus far, and for helping to push me. You know, even though I'm gonna be writing, you still can expect it to hear the podcast. Here's some more podcasts. All right, in mental health news, there was an article from Science Daily that dropped the end of last month that I'm really just digesting today. It's actually from the University of California, San Diego, and it explores an axis that was, I would say, maybe like 65% rumor within the mental health community, but also just within the science community, an axis of, you know, our diets and, you know, what that creates for us mentally. Now, for me personally, the last couple of weeks, my diet has been like, if I had to rate it, my diet has been like a 6 out of 10. You know, like I have had days where I may have, you know, ate something where I'm like, why did I just eat that? Like, there's no reason. There's absolutely no reason why I should eat a large pizza by myself. There's no reason to do that. Like, it just don't work for me personally, you know. But, you know, as I told you, I've been, you know, writing, and my mind is kind of in a lot of places right now. And as a result of that, you know, the some other parts of my life kind of get micromanaged, and some of that is diet. So my diet had fell down to a 6. So, you know, I'm just thinking about, I wonder, you know, how they are related, and if they are related, my diet and my mental capacity or my diet and like just mental health in general, or our diets and mental health in general, I should say. And come to find out, they actually have found ties. This is a recent study, found ties between, you know, wisdom, loneliness, and literally your intestinal multitude. That's what the title of the article is. And researchers have known a long time about the gut-brain axis, quote-unquote, that's what they call it. This particular study adds on to the years of studies, because they actually have found that people with larger social networks tend to have more diverse gut microbiotas. It was a study that involved 187 participants. They were between the ages of 28 and 97. And they measured, you know, certain things like loneliness, wisdom, compassion, social support, and social engagement. And again, that's a quote. And those are all things that, like, you know, we can't really see them. You know, the only way to really research that stuff is to do these studies with these participants who are open about, you know, how they're feeling mentally and stuff like that. So it's just interesting to have these people to share along the lines of different topics that we haven't really been able to explore as much as I would think we have with all the centuries that we've been walking the earth. So what they did was they analyzed the poo to get the gut microbiota and look at the microbial gut diversity between the 187 participants. Now, they measured it in two ways. They called it alpha diversity. And one of the authors of the study, Tanya T. Nugent, or Dr. Nugent, I should say, who is assistant professor of psychiatry at UC San Diego School of Medicine. Tanya said, "We found that lower levels of loneliness and higher levels of wisdom, compassion, social support, and engagement were associated with greater phylogenetic richness and diversity of the gut microbiome." So basically, they found links of loneliness, compassion, and wisdom with diverse microbial makeups, and then contrarily saw that reduced microbial diversity was related typically to worse physical and mental health. And apparently they found connections to different diseases, including obesity, major depressive disorder, and more. So now I will say this, it's just the beginning, believe it or not, the beginning stages of really understanding the connection between our gut and our mind. And just like Dr. Dilip Jeste, or Heste, of UC San Diego School of Medicine said, "We need to investigate much more thoroughly to better understand the phenomenon of the gut-brain axis." Interesting study. It's one that I actually recommend you would check out if you have some free time. I will post it up on thecitizens.com so you can log on and check it out. In COVID-19 news, President Joe Biden had moved up the deadline for COVID-19 vaccine eligibility to April 19th. So that means that pretty much by the end of April, I'll say pretty much within the spring, there will be a vaccine available for everybody, you know. So it's interesting to see, the different stages of how we are combating and fighting back against COVID. We can't get back the time. Like, we can't. Like, the year has passed, you know, and sadly, we've lost a lot of people along the way. But it's impossible to not feel some sort of light, or at least an introduction of light, if you will, in a way back to life before COVID. Even though, you know, I don't think we'll ever get back to that life, because that's just how it is. But to get us to some sort of feeling, some sort of comfort, you know, some sort of like health security, as much security as possible, you know. I'm getting my vaccine this weekend. I'm excited about it. This morning I had no clue that this would be happening. So I'm excited. I'm excited about it. I can't tell you what to do with the vaccine. I have no clue. Like, you know, honestly speaking, if I wasn't supposed to be out the country next month, I don't know if I would have done it, you know, already. But it's just me being honest with you. You got to be honest with yourself to have that conversation about the vaccine and really lay everything out and really see what you want to do for yourself. And as always, I'm wishing, you know, good health and safety for us all. All right. Without further ado, episode 150. Our guest for today is Jay Julian from My Brother's Keeper. And it's time to have a conversation about male-to-male platonic intimacy and how it can play a role in a better future for us all.
It's Brian's World.
Welcome back to the show, bro. I love talking to you, because I feel like I always learn something. Dude, you do so much reading, bro. Like, it's no telling what you've forgotten, honestly. Let's start with MBK, My Brother's Keeper. Is it all right if I say MBK? Because I feel like I've been saying that for a while.
Yeah, that's cool.
Okay.
We
okay.
often refer to it as MBK.
Yeah. Yeah. It just kind of rolls off the tongue. You know what I mean? So what exactly is My Brother's Keeper?
My Brother's Keeper started off as a healing space, a support group for men of all kinds from all different walks of life. We started off with, you know, just having Zoom calls. It started off with once a week, and then we doubled it up, and now we're doing it twice a week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have some other ideas to just create more spaces and provide more opportunities to build brotherhood, but also, you know, cultivate this culture where men are focused on healing.
And so when you say healing, what types of things are you looking to help people heal with?
Basically, you know, we are a non-clinical support group. Mm-hmm. So we do promote, you know, men seek therapy, counseling, you know, whatever your means, you know, that works for you is, mm-hmm. From a clinical standpoint. But, outside of that, we talk about everything. We talk about fatherhood. We're about to talk about co-parenting this month, emasculation, protecting women. So we talk about everything, and we just try to have just real conversations that, you know, can just help enlighten each other and give each other more information on different topics. Mm-hmm. But then we also have, you know, free time and open space for men to just talk about whatever it is that they're dealing with on a personal level.
And I can imagine that, like, in the beginning stages of, not the beginning stages of the group, but the beginning stages of men being comfortable, becoming comfortable with opening up. What's some of the things that you have put into place to kind of help, you know, these guys ease into opening up about some dark things that, you know, a lot of guys ain't comfortable talking about?
Honestly, I mean, we started off just trying to be real, trying to be transparent, trying to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Those who, you know, are comfortable with doing so, you know, will share whatever it is that they're comfortable with sharing, and that help, you know, open up the conversation. But to be honest, I don't remember what week it was. We're about 10, 11 weeks in now. Mm-hmm. I think it was about maybe like the halfway point, like week 4 or 5,
yeah,
where we had one of the fellas shared a very, like, tough story. Mm-hmm. And that kind of just broke the ice, you know, and ever since then, I guess people saw that it was, like, really, really safe. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's levels to intimacy and levels of feeling safe and comfortable. And we were comfortable with sharing different things and talking about different topics. But when it gets to sharing those really painful moments, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some people will kind of, like, guard that. And really, it just starts with one person being comfortable and courageous enough to go there. And then after that, it's just a domino, you know, effect. And that's how every week has been. Since then, everyone has been more comfortable and more courageous to just share whatever it is that they're holding on to, that they've been waiting to tell somebody. You know what I'm saying? So that's just really how it happened. You can't really plan it. You just got to be consistent and wait for the levees to break.
What was the moment like for you personally, you know, when you said, look, we, you know, something has to be done? Like, what was the problem that you wanted to solve? And what was that moment like when you decided to push forward with MBK?
Well, originally, my brother Miguel actually had the idea to start My Brother's Keeper, mm-hmm. to start the Zoom calls. And he had asked me to, you know, just come through and be a part of the movement. And ever since then, we just kind of hit the ground running and just going, like, really, really hard. But the opportunity to create a space for men to heal was needed. It was evident. We are the leading causes of suicide, depression, homicide. You know what I mean? Like, all of these different types of disease, heart disease, like, pretty much almost all of the negative statistics that comes with mm-hmm. stress and weight and emotional pain and trauma and, like, all of these different things that just come with life. Like, we've been holding and carrying so much that it's been killing us.
Yeah.
So that has been evident, that something needs to be done, but aggressively.
Yeah.
So, you know, My Brother's Keeper is, you know, one of many movements that are trying to be aggressive with creating spaces for men to heal and to promote, you know, therapy and mental health and self-care, self-love and brotherhood and all the things that are going to help us become better men.
When I think about it, like I think about the centuries of like rhetoric that was created around both sexes, male and female, but that rhetoric around the male species is just like, bro, you're not allowed to feel anything. You're not allowed to address anything or even have emotions for real. For you guys to get started on MBK and to be pushing for, I think you said what, 12 weeks now, right?
Yeah, it's about 12 weeks now. I think this is week 12.
Yeah, that's very courageous. It's like, you know, it's like, I don't want to say reversing history, but reversing history. Like, what do you think that besides the societal norms that kind of put males in this box internally, do you think that guys feel weird, like addressing emotions at first, like even without the societal norms, just off the basis of the DNA and the genetics and all of that we have within us?
No, I think most of it is just societal pressures and societal condition. Because if you pay attention to boys, and they're very loving, they're very in tune with their feelings and their emotions. It's the world that hardens us up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's our job to reverse that, as you were saying, reverse that, because that's not natural.
Yeah.
It's not natural at all. And it's hurting us more than it's helping us. What tends to happen is we tend to look at men who are matured and use that as the measurement for masculinity instead of who and what we are at our natural state. That's kind of the dilemma that we're dealing with, is understanding that at our natural state, we are loving. At our natural state, we are servants. At our natural state, we are in tune with our emotions. We just have to understand what that looks like in a matured shape, form, and fashion. What does that look like at 30? What does that look like at 40 and 50? Instead of suppressing those things, those characteristics and traits and the essence of who we are, you know what I mean, in order to fit this box that the world puts us in.
And what do you say to the people who say, well, you know, men, that's just men. Like, we don't feel. We're not supposed to feel.
For so long. So if you think about it, right, you had to be a tough son of a gun in the past.
Yeah.
Whether you were a man going out to war, whether, you know, you were a man working in a factory, whether you were a man, you know, climbing up the corporate ladder, like you had to fight your way to the top in order to be successful, in order to be that protector and that provider of your household. That's not the day and times that we live in right now.
Yeah.
Yes, you can take that route, but it's not necessary. It's not the only route, and it's not the healthiest route. So there is a way to be quote unquote manly, or to tap into your divine masculinity, but also understand that I'm a man that has feelings, because I'm human. Mm. You know, you're a human being first and foremost, and then you're assigned a gender, which is male.
There's power in that understanding, you believe, right?
Correct.
For so long, the story was the opposite. The story was that, like, those kind of things take the power away from the man.
That's why we're talking about emasculation this week. You know, I think it's power and understanding. I don't want to get too spiritual, but who created you first and foremost? That's how you know thyself. Who created you and why? Mm-hmm. So whoever created you, whatever it is that you believe, isn't dependent upon societal norms or societal constructs. With being emasculated, to be emasculated is to decrease your role in the family or society. If your role is determined by God, the creator, a higher power, whatever it is you believe in, then society or human beings can never decrease your role. Mm. They can never tell you that you are less than who you were created to be. You know what I mean? So there's rules that are divinely designed, and then there's societal rules.
Right.
And society, with the limited vision that we have as human beings, have these rules that says, as a man, you need to do this, that, and the other. But that's a limited viewpoint. You know what I mean? Like, when there's a being higher than all of us that is able to speak to us, whether you believe, you know, God speaks through the Bible or God speaks to you verbally, like whatever your relationship with God is, you have the ability to learn for yourself what your role is and how you're supposed to maneuver throughout the world, which doesn't have to be limited by societal rules. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of the time we subject ourselves to what other people think. Like, we spend a lot of time on impression management.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Instead of focusing, okay, what is my purpose and what steps do I need to take in order to reach that purpose? Because my goal is ultimately to please God. It's not to please man.
Really tapping into, like you said, the what's natural to you.
A real man is going to, and I hate when people say real men, but for me, my understanding of manliness is a man who's courageous enough to follow his path.
Everything else is, the details is kind of in your personality. You know what I mean? That makes, you know, this man A different from man B and man C or whatever.
Right. And then you have different cultures, different religious beliefs, different social beliefs. It's like so many different things that can affect or alter what a man looks like in different, you know, subcategories or subgroups or, you know, demographics. So what's masculine in Asia is not the same thing that's masculine in the hood in New York. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, they operate totally different. So we can't really just have like one set of rules that say, if you want to be a man, you have to operate this way or look this way or talk this way. Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, that is kind of superficial.
It took me a while to like even realize that, like, that whole assembly line idea of manhood or even people in general. I'm kind of growing out of that now. You know, I'm entering a new stage of life, a new stage of understanding. And, you know, I look at different men in general, just men that, you know, I revere, you know, people that I look up to, you know, and they all look different. But I don't know why, but when I was younger, they all looked the same. You know what I mean? They all look like you just can't have no emotions. But now I'm really starting to tap into some of these leaders and, you know, some of the dark thoughts that they may have, you know, every now and then. You know what I mean? Some of the dark moments that you hear from some of these prominent leaders, like, I don't know. I mean, I guess the conversation is expanding, but see, how do you think that the rest of society is approaching this conversation? Like, would you say that it's leaning towards some sort of improvement?
I think we are improving faster than we've ever, you know, been improving throughout all of history. Mm-hmm. I think because of our access to information, our access to more human beings. Like, I think these conversations were being had. We just weren't privy to it. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, we can literally just go online and see a man from India talk about being a better father, you know, or see a man from Africa talk about what leadership means. You know what I mean? Like, so we get all of these different perspectives about manhood and masculinity and what everyone's dealing with as a father or a husband or a leader or an entrepreneur or activist. Like, and we get to see, like, okay, these are the examples of men who are actually fighting through all of the obstacles that life, like, throw at us. Mm-hmm. And this is how they handle it. Oh, he's fighting for freedom in this country, and he cries.
Yeah.
Wow. And he's respected. You know what I mean? Like, you get to see that. Oh, he loves his wife so much that while talking about how much she has done for him, he sheds a tear. So, you know, like, we are able to start seeing things that we might not have seen in our inner circle or in our neighborhood or our family, because the world has become opened up to us. And then it gets people talking about all of these things. So I definitely think that, you know, we are moving quickly. I think that people are starting to see, like, men are hurting.
Yeah.
You know, all over the world, men are hurting. Little boys are hurting.
Yeah.
You know, it's become so overwhelming that even women are crying out because they understand, like, they can't have good husbands or fathers or protectors if men aren't able to heal. If you aren't healed, your ability to love is limited. Your ability to perform is limited. Your ability to protect is limited. Your ability to grow is limited. Like, your ability to do everything is limited because you're almost paralyzed by whatever it is that's holding you back. I mean, research shows that, you know, men who like intimacy, they die quicker. Men who are quote unquote deadbeat fathers, they deal with depression more than men who are active in their children's lives. They deal with addictions and they deal with suicidal thoughts. Like when you don't have that love and that intimacy and that family like environment, whether it's a brotherhood, whether it's a church family, whatever it is, like if you isolate yourself, you're putting yourself in a position where you are at risk of mental, emotional, and physical harm or illness or dis-ease, however you want to categorize it.
I think that I really fell into that, you know, to the point where like the last, you know, a couple years for me have been very all over the place, you know, and I think you know that, but I, you know, I'm just sitting around just thinking like, wow, like I really haven't really been hanging out. You know, I haven't really been like, you know, spending time in mm-hmm. brothers circles where I'm able to put in the group chat like, yo, man problem. Like this.
Right. Exactly. Man,
like I haven't done any of that.
A lot of us do it unconsciously.
Exactly. That's what I was about to say. It just happened.
Yeah, it's just unconscious. Like, because we are goal oriented people, right? Yeah. So when we have a purpose, when we have a goal that we're committed to, we tend to lock in on it like a pit bull, and we're going to get that goal accomplished. And sometimes that means you're investing so much time into that goal that you unconsciously don't have time for everything else. Like one of my mentors always says, when you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else automatically. You can say yes to my commitment to, you know, becoming the best in this industry, or, you know, being number one in this lane, or creating my own lane, whatever your goal is, and you lock into that. And before you know it, you've said no to hanging out. You've said no to watching the game. You said no to going to the gym. Like you've consistently said no, time has gone past, mm-hmm. and you're missing intimacy. You're missing that connection. You're missing those relationships and those bonds that help pour into your cup so you can perform better in life. And then when you're drained, you make questionable decisions when you're drained.
Yeah.
You know, because you're not even thinking correctly. You're desperate. Immediately thinking, yes, how can I cope with what I'm feeling right now? You know what I'm saying? How can I make myself feel better? And oftentimes that's not the best decision, whatever it is that we come up with. So it's just something that we have to be cognizant of and aware of and intentional about, to just make sure that even if we fall into it, we know that we have people that'll check up on us. You know what I mean? Like, or there is a support group or family that's not too far away so that we can just tap back into that and get filled up.
Do you think that any of that is like connected to a misguided approach to having to be the provider or be a provider?
For sure. I think that as a society, we've missed the opportunity to take a holistic approach to manliness and masculinity, where we are focusing on mind, body, and spirit. You know, when it comes to being a provider, that's more than just paying the bills or putting food on the table. Right. Because even if you are a great provider, you could be making 6-7 figures. Right. Mm-hmm. If you're not mentally or emotionally healthy, then you're creating harm that money possibly cannot fix.
Oh, yeah. Without question. It could make it worse.
So is neglecting those parts of yourself actually being a good provider and a protector? Because you're not protecting your family if you are contributing to the destruction of your family. Mm-hmm. If you're contributing to creating any type of harm or any type of dis-ease or dysfunction that takes place within your family, even if it's just your absence, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like these things are things that money cannot fix. You know, like money, if you got a lot of money, maybe you can go to a family counselor that can help you or whatever. But even then, sometimes, you know, that's a lot of work. Like that's not guaranteed. But if you are working on yourself, your mind, your body, your spirit and working on becoming a man that can help provide, then you put yourself and your family, your loved ones in a better position. Mm-hmm. I think that the need or desire to be the sole provider and its attachment to masculinity, I think that that has been misplaced, or I'll say it's rooted in a place of ignorance. Mm-hmm. I use ignorance as its true definition, as in not knowing better, because I mean, ultimately that tradition was created, you know, during a time when women couldn't work.
Right.
Women couldn't contribute to the family financially, even when they wanted to. You know what I'm saying? So that had nothing to do with being a man. It was just only a man can do it at that time. Now, when we have women thriving in corporate America now, sometimes making more money than their man. Like I posted on Facebook a while ago, I forgot the percentage and I don't want to, you know, mess the stats up, but pretty much a large percentage of women who are married nowadays are the sole providers.
Wow.
People should look that up and get the direct statistics, but it's an overwhelming like statistic. Like you would be blown away. Like, so there's this false narrative out there that, hey, men are providing, or this is the norm. Like this is no longer the norm. So for men to be out there trying to kill themselves to provide, that's not healthy for you. That's not healthy for your relationship. That's not healthy for your family. And at the end of the day, like we got to even start questioning, like, do you even love what you're doing? You know, like that's a totally other, you know, different conversation that needs to be, you know, explored. Because if you don't even love what you're doing, you're going to come home with a lot of weight on you.
And probably go to sleep with that same weight too.
You're going to go to sleep with that weight. Like you're going to take a lot of your frustrations out on the people that surround you. Yeah. Like it's just not a healthy dynamic. And we're living in a world where, man, there's a lot of opportunities. You don't have to do certain things just because it pays the bills. Now, if you don't have any options, you know what I'm saying? Like, of course, do what you got to do until you can do what you want to do. Mm-hmm. But your health got to come first. Yeah. Your health has to come first. The health of your family, your relationship, your community, like that has to come first, or else you're kind of hustling backwards.
Was this ever difficult for you?
All of it was difficult for me in different times of my life. Even as an adult, like even a few years ago, I knew the power of having intimate relationships, you know, with my brothers, with having a support team around me, with hitting up my mentors or whatever the case may be. And I isolated myself. Mm-hmm. And one thing that we have to understand about men is because we've been taught that we need to be the providers and the protectors and the strong ones. And like we put all of this responsibility on men. Men don't want to be a burden to other people because we feel like we're the ones that's supposed to be carrying others.
And we're the ones that's supposed to be figuring out our own mess too.
And figuring out and fixing our own mess by ourselves.
Yep. That bothered me the first 3 sessions of therapy was like me fighting me and my therapist. I'm like, yo, nope. I got this, shorty. Like I don't, you know, it's weird because even in that moment, like, bro, I didn't even know that that's what I was doing until now. I'm able to look back a couple of years later and say, okay, that's who I was in that moment. But it was all second nature. It was just all like, nope, let me shut down. Let me isolate and let me just figure this out on my own or not figure it out. And, you know, whatever happens, happens, you know, but either way, my thing was like, I got this. You know what I mean?
We see the memes, you know, it's funny because I posted a few days ago, like men need to hear, I got this too, or I got you. Women say it all the time. Like one of the sexiest things men can say to a woman is I got you, or I got this, or I got it. Right. Because that kind of determines whether you're a real man or not, but who got us?
Facts. You know? Facts.
And it doesn't have to be a woman, you know, but it is one of the best feelings to know that, yo, while I'm out here doing all of these things for everybody else, that there are people or a person out here who has me as well, mm-hmm. who has my back, who is going to fight for me and go the extra mile or above and beyond to make sure that I'm okay. And I think for men, once you truly see that a person or a group is genuine and you can be a flawed individual or a quote unquote weak individual or whatever, however you want to frame it, like I can come to you as I am and not be judged and get the support that I want, then you're all in, you know, because at the end of the day, like, we're all human beings who were once a child. That same desire to be parented, to be in a safe environment, like, that never goes away. Like, most of our childhood, most of our trauma comes from our childhood, right?
Yep. Things that we forgot about.
Things that we've totally forgot about and blocked out of our conscious mind still is lingering within us. The solution to that is the same solution that we needed when we were a child, which is love, right? It doesn't change because we're older. It doesn't change because the circumstances may be different or we're dealing with new obstacles and different relational dynamics. Like, the answer and solution is still love. Men need love too.
Yeah. And sometimes I feel like we want that to be more complicated than it really is.
It's crazy. I just finished reading this book by Dr. Brian Wise. And he was just saying, like, love can overcome anything when it's able to flow freely. That quote was so powerful to me because we don't understand how often we block the flow of love in our lives. You know, whether it's the social constructs that we were talking about earlier, or whether it's gender roles, or whether it's superficial things, whether it's our own ego and insecurities, our defense mechanisms. Like, there's so many different things that we put in the way of the flow of love. And then we miss the rewards that love would have brought us if we had just gotten out of our own way.
It literally feels like it's just taking the guard down from yourself and to stop fighting yourself.
I think that sometimes we're so familiar with the fight itself.
Yeah. Kind of become addicted to it a little bit.
We're codependent upon the fight. Mm. You know, like, a part of our identity is the fight. You know, and no disrespect to any vets, but, you know, a lot of vets will identify themselves by the war that they were in, right?
Yeah.
I think throughout life, those of us who aren't vets, we do the same thing with life. Mm-hmm. Like, my battle is depression or suicidal thoughts or my divorce, or, like, I can identify things that were a battle or war for me and I can hold on to that. And get comfortable with it, you know, even kind of romanticize it a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, I'm in a relationship with this war, this battle. I don't want to let it go. Like, I want to honor and respect this war. And if I let it go, I feel like I'm doing it a disservice, or maybe I'm doing self a disservice. It's like telling a vet, like, forget about the war.
And like, just imagine their face after you say that to them.
Exactly. Like, like, are you kidding me? You know what I mean? Like, do you understand the sacrifices that I made? Do you understand what I lost, what I experienced, how it affected me? Like, I can't forget about it. And that's how we treat our own personal traumas and our own personal battles. Like, why would I ever forget about that? You know, why would I let this go? If I let this go, then it invalidates my experience. Kind of, sort of, right?
Kind of feels like you can't exist without your trauma.
Exactly. Mm. Like, it's a badge. And I need that badge so people can, you know, they can identify me.
That's amazing.
But we have new positive badges that we can apply to ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, or that we can use as, you know, new identities. And I think that that's the exciting part of life for me. Like, once I realized that, like, that's what has gotten me excited. That's what motivates me. That's what helps me, like, wake up in the morning and continue to, like, push forward and do all of the work that I do, because I have new things to aspire to be called, or to aspire to attach to who I am as a human being and as a man, you know? So I want to be a lover. Like, I want, like, that's my primary goal, is for when people, you know, speak about me, I want them to say, hey, I've never met a person who loves as hard and as consistently as Jay. I want that to be my badge.
Yeah.
I want my badge to be, hey, that man was God's love wrapped in human flesh. And I can't be that if I'm holding on to my old wars.
Exactly. You feel that anxiety up until you get to that threshold of seeing like the new you, or not even the new you. That sounds dramatic, but seeing a different you that's not attached to your trauma. And then, like you said, when you cross that threshold, now you're excited about stepping into this newer version of yourself, if you will. You know what I mean? Or this other version of yourself.
Right.
I dig it, man. I dig it. So that anxiety up to that threshold, what, like just one tip or just one thing that you would say to a man who may be listening, who's like in those moments of, I don't know if I want to go through that door yet. You know what I mean? Like, what's something that you would say to kind of ease them?
Take it one day at a time. You got to decide what kind of man you want to be. For me, what helps is writing down exactly who I want to be and then writing down the value of maybe these new habits or new traits that I want to start to implement in my life and how that's going to positively benefit me and everyone around me. Throughout the day, when you have to make decisions, you have this on your mind. Hey, when I make this decision, this is how it's going to positively affect me and everyone else around me. And then you continue to do that until it becomes a habit. And before you know it, you've started to become that new person without even, like, you don't have to battle with it. You don't have to war over it. You don't have to think about what you don't want to be. Just focus on what you do want to be. Just one decision at a time. I literally remember telling myself that every single day. Like, don't worry about hitting the home run. Just make the right decision, one decision at a time. And before you know it, you would have accomplished so much and you would have grown and evolved so much that you wouldn't even be, you know, as invested in the old version of you like you were before, because you would have already experienced and reaped the benefits of these new decisions that you started to make.
I love it. What about the guys who are at the threshold and are ready to cross that threshold and they want to get on board with MBK? How can they get in touch with you?
MBK, we have a group on Facebook called My Brother's Keeper. You can find us on there, or you can find me, Jay Julian, and I can add you to the group. We also have a new Instagram page called MBK Tribe. And I believe our Twitter page is MBK Tribe as well. We post our weekly meetings almost daily. So you can, you know, check out a flyer. We have our Zoom meeting code and password on there, as well as the topics that we'll be talking about for each day. So we're pretty accessible, but you know, we're still growing and still trying to, you know, figure out how to reach more men and how to make this process, you know, as easy as possible.
What were the episodes that were coming up again? Or not the episodes, the topics that were coming up again? I say episodes. How you know? I feel like I'm still at work.
That's fine. So we're doing emasculation this week.
Yeah.
Then we're doing protecting women next week, or supporting women next week. The week after that is going to be purpose versus stress. And the week after that is co-parenting.
Wow.
It's been an amazing journey. Our main goal and vision is to help create the greatest generation of men of all times. So like I said earlier, men are goal-oriented and objective-oriented beings, right? 100. And one of the things that, you know, has become a challenge for a lot of groups, you know, that are male-dominated is the ego and the competitive nature that we often have. And I think that that's been misguided. You know, people often try to fight for the top spot, whether you want to be the captain on the football team, or whether you want to be the president of the United States. Like, we've been conditioned to compete with each other.
Yeah.
With MBK, our goal is to take that competitive nature, take that energy and direct it towards a vision that allows us to work together instead of compete against each other. Mm-hmm. So we have the opportunity to come together as men of all backgrounds, all races, social class, religions, whatever, right? And come together and determine what it looks like to become the best generation of men of all times, and then hit that mark together. And I think that that's something that we can do, where we kind of plant our flag and create history together. We don't have to worry about, you know, battling each other or competing with each other. Like, we can come together as a team and we can do something amazing that no other generation has done. And that's what's exciting about MBK, is that it's all inclusive. You know, there's no pressure to make every single, you know, meeting. Like, if you make one, that's cool, because it's really about building a culture. I have friends who've never, you know, came to a meeting, but they'll push the flyers. You know what I mean? Like, if we're having conversations in the Facebook group, they'll, you know, contribute to that. I had one of my friends had commented under one of my posts a few days ago, where, you know, this young man, he was just talking about, you know, the work that, you know, he sees us doing, and how he's, you know, in the process of following his own dreams or whatever. And one of my friends just came through and, like, just didn't know this man at all, and just kind of, like, spoke into his life and, like, encouraged him and motivated him, you know what I'm saying? Like, and gave them, like, this good energy. And he's like, wow, I've never even gotten this kind of response on Facebook before. And I'm like, this needs to be the norm, where we as men are able to just lift each other up and encourage each other, like, all across the board. It shouldn't be limited to a safe space, you know, on Zoom. Like, that's amazing. And we're doing a lot of great work, you know, with our meetings, but this should be the norm all throughout our culture and our nation. So that's the ultimate goal. And that's what's most exciting about the work that we're doing, is that we get to change culture. Yeah. You know, we get to totally flip the switch and change what male-to-male interaction looks like. Mm. I'm looking forward to the day where we're all smiling at each other, nodding at each other, giving each other daps, like, even if we don't know each other, looking out for each other's wives and children, and, you know, being able to protect each other's place of business or place of residence. Like, we are brothers, even though we're not blood brothers. And, like, there's nothing that we can do or say that could make that untrue.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a fact. It's just that we haven't been operating like that. And just like in real families, brothers could be brothers and not mess with each other.
Yeah.
So, but there needs to be a reunion. And that's what we're doing right now, is we're reuniting men and we're bringing men together to have a healthier, you know, relationship with ourselves first and foremost, and then with each other, so that we can be the best generation of men, and we can be great husbands and fathers and sons and brothers and government leaders and teachers and, like, whatever it is that you want to be. Like, yeah, man, all of that starts with developing yourself and creating this brotherhood, so that you have that support, so that you can perform at your best.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people say, yo, I don't need this group. I don't need this brotherhood. I don't need to go to the Zooms, but they've never been in this environment where you got tons of men cheering you on in life. You know what I mean? Like, that's crazy. Man come through, yo, I'm having an issue in this area. And you have men from all different walks of life giving you their input and cheering you on, telling you can do it. Yo, here's this book I've been reading. It'll help you specifically on becoming a better father. Here's this book I've been reading. It'll help you become a better husband. Or these are the exercises or practices or habits or whatever. Like, all of these little things, these resources is thrown out there that's literally changing people's lives every single week. Yo, that thing you told me to do with my wife, I did that. And we're no longer fighting no more. You know what I'm saying? Like, these are the little things like that can help change everything in a man's life. So when people say, I don't need it, it's just, you just don't know what you don't know. And that's okay. But usually when a man comes through, he's going to tell us, hey, didn't think I needed this, but now that I'm here, I see it's a safe space. I see how y'all interact with each other. It's love. Like, we don't argue. Like, we respect each other in there. Like, men love it. A lot of men are the strongest people in their circle or in their family, and they're carrying everything, and they get to unload it in our groups.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and
kind of clear the air. Yeah,
man, it's an amazing journey, and we're just at the brink of it. The work itself has fueled me. Like, I never even thought that I would be this excited about life, like some of the greatest weeks of my life. So
I can hear it.
Yeah, I can.
I love it, man. I love it, man. Cause you got, like, how many people have actually been passionate about this conversation, creating, you know, the best men? And I'm thinking about the snowball effect of that and like what the best men can create, you know.
Yes, exactly.
Down the line, it's just exactly. Things just change. You know what I mean?
If you think about starting with being the change that you want to see mm-hmm. in the world or the community, and you multiply that mm-hmm. by 100 men, 1,000 men, 1,000,000 men intentionally, like that's amazing. Like that's a movement that I can buy into, and it's a movement that is invested in the long-term rewards. You know, like we talked to my partner Miguel, and I was saying like, hey, like a part of being the best generation of men ever created is building the best generation of men. Like we can be the Coach K's, you know, we can be Popovich's, you know, like we can be the best coaches that you've ever heard of that have gone down in history, like
made champions
along with developing ourselves mm-hmm. and, you know, evolving ourselves. A part of that is building champions.
Yeah.
Intentionally, you know, but by the masses.
Yep. That's great to say repeatedly and on purpose. I think about Phil Jackson. He got Kobe and Mike. You know what
Phil,
I mean? Like
Phil Jackson.
What does that say about him?
Yes. Like imagine you having to coach the best.
It don't get no better.
The opportunities is endless, man. Like,
yeah.
And that's the beauty of it. The group isn't just about us. You know, it's about providing opportunities for our families. Like I've had talks with the fellas like, hey, like we have resources. We have a bigger network and our network is going to continue to grow. So, you know, we don't have to be the perfect father. Mm-hmm. We don't have to, you know, be the end all of all information. You know, if your child is struggling in an area and another brother is an expert in that area, use that resource. You know, that's how we create the village. I might be great with marketing. You might be great with finances. Someone else might be great with administration. Someone else might be great with, you know, design. Like, we don't have to be experts at everything. And that's another thing that, you know, a lot of men deal with is yep. trying to,
same
to be experts of everything and pass down that information when it's like, nah, like you don't have to be the expert. You can just have great connections with experts. Mm-hmm. And then, hey, yo, I need you to rap to my child about finances real quick. You know, I need you to rap to my child about, you know, whatever it is. It could be health and wellness, fitness, like spirituality, like whatever it is, there's a big network that people can tap into that can help their loved ones as well. You know, we've had people post job opportunities, like, and you know, this is at a small level, but you know, God willing, we can do this at a grand scale where we're literally here to help each other in every arena of our lives.
Yeah. Like even if some men are afraid of the conversation right now, it's still contagious. It's still something that's intriguing, you know, and it's a view of a better life for not just the group, not just men, but for everybody. Everybody wins.
For sure. And we're doing these co-ed talks.
Mm. I saw that on yeah. sex, right? It was one on sex, right?
Yeah. The first one was on sex. So, mm-hmm. you know, that was interesting, but you know, the women came into our space and a lot of them said like, yo, we've never been in a space like this before. We've never seen this many mature and intelligent men, you know, these many emotionally intelligent men, you know, and we really kind of shown like, hey, these weeks that we've been putting in, just rapping to each other and building and talking about all of these different topics is paying off.
Yeah.
You know, and we're getting to a place where it's contagious. And even the women are, you know, it's rubbing off on the women as well. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
With it being a beautiful thing, bro, like I said, I appreciate you and appreciate y'all for creating that picture. You know what I mean? Or helping to create that picture and making it a reality for a lot of us, man. Hey, man, appreciate you for stopping by the show again, bro.
Of course, man. Anytime.
Don't go nowhere. I'm coming to see you. And y'all don't want no problems.
It's Brian's World Live.
You ain't seen it happen yet.